developments in the 2012 race for governor. Where will the Democrats turn for a candidate? Mitch Daniels at CPAC. Was it a good showing? School choice, a new school funding formula, abortion restrictions. Fort Wayne asks, what's in a name? That and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 18, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, there's an anticipated shakeup in the Democratic field for governor in 2012. Evansville Mayor Jonathan Weinzappel is expected to withdraw his name from consideration. Weinzappel earlier announced that he would bypass a run for re-election, stirring speculation that he would seek statewide office. If Weinzappel gets out, former House Speaker John Gregg and Congressman Joe Donnelly will become the focus of most speculation. What would a Weinzappel departure mean? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, does it appear that the Democrats are in disarray?
I wouldn't say it's disarray. I think it's too early, obviously, to consider them to be in disarray. The Donnelly campaign, if there is such a thing, I think he's probably waiting to see what happens to reapportionment before he makes a decision. There's a lot of sentiment out there in the Democrat Party, from what I hear, for John Gregg to get in it. They think he would be a formidable candidate, and I think he would be also. And then I'm sure there are others who, now that Weinzappel is out of the race, because there was a lot of speculation that he would be in, we'll take a look at it. So there's plenty of time between now and the time you have to decide to run for governor in 2012.
Yeah, I don't know why we would be in disarray when the Republicans don't have a candidate yet either,
They've got three Mike Pence so far. Out there.
They don't have Mike Pence announcing he's running. But they've already gotten rid of, they threw Becky Skillman over the side. So it's not as if, you know, they've got all their ducks in a row.
Don't be touchy.
Don't play partisan.
Okay. John Gregg was backing Jonathan Weinzappel. Mm-hmm. If Weinzappel gets out, Gregg says he'll take a strong look at it. Does he become the front runner?
I don't know that there is a front runner yet. I think you have to wait and see what the field looks like. I mean, I think the goal from the party perspective would be to have one strong candidate, and I think that'll be Parker's goal, to try to encourage everybody to unite behind.
Chairman Dan Parker.
Yes, to unite behind one candidate. And, you know, and that may put us in sharp contrast to the Republicans, who may have a primary for theirs. I hope so.
And you may have a primary.
This is all getting sorted out pretty early, isn't it?
Well, it is. First of all, it's a surprise that the mayor decided he didn't want to run, because all signs were pointing in that direction, and it looked like he would be capable of mounting a campaign that would potentially win. So it's surprising that that happened. But he's doing it at a time. I mean, if you're not going to run, now's the time to tell people you're not going to run, because it does give them time to find other candidates to sort the field out and to get it taken care of. So, you know, there's still plenty of time, but it is a big surprise.
John Gregg presents something different than other Democrats. He's pro-life, he's pro-gun, he's from southern Indiana. I mean, would he be a different sort of candidate than other people in the Democratic Party?
Sure, I think he probably does bring some different things to the table. Although you could make the argument it was the same set of credentials that Brad Ellsworth brought to the U.S. Senate race. When you look at things such as support of gun rights and ownership rights, as you point out, mm-hmm. pro-life. But yes, he has a constituency that is perhaps atypical, or at least different from some of the other Democrats who were being bandied about for this mm-hmm. race. But I'll add what everybody else has said to what everyone else has said about it being a surprise. I mean, we've all got joked about getting so many news releases from Evansville. I guess that means we'll be no longer be getting those from city government, or maybe we will. Who knows? But
running from Evansville is a very difficult thing to do. Starting your day there every day, it's physically very hard to do. To make the campaign trips, you got to make all over the state of Indiana, and that would be a hard thing to do. Plus, there are only about, 5% of the people of Indiana that probably ever heard of him because that market is such a small television market. So that gives you somewhat of a disadvantage going in if you're running against somebody from a market that has a lot of TV exposure. So, you know, there were a lot of things to consider there. But the Gregg candidacy, I think he will take a harder look now, and he will be a formidable candidate if he decides to get in.
Both John Gregg and Mike Pence are former talk show hosts.
Yep.
That seemed like
That helps with name recognition. Maybe you ought to think about it.
I'd have to join a party first.
You would.
Did you run for governor?
You'd have to take a stand.
Would you really want to join a party that would have you as a member?
No. I think that's right.
We'll concede. You can have
it. Let's move on. Governor Mitch Daniels won positive reviews for his speech to the CPAC convention, but he fared poorly in the CPAC straw poll this week. Daniels won just 4% of the vote, even though the audience cheered his description of conservative principles applied to state government. He also warned about the threat posed by the national debt.
It is the new red menace, this time consisting of ink. We can debate its origins endlessly and search for villains on ideological grounds, but the reality is pure arithmetic. No enterprise, small or large, public or private, can remain self-governing, let alone successful, so deeply in hock to others as we are about to be.
And, Eleni, 4%, what does that tell you?
Well, I think it was George Will who said that Mitch Daniels was the candidate for the grown-ups in the Republican Party. Well, they're not the nominating part of the Republican Party, apparently. He is an able administrator, by all accounts, okay? But in terms of the kind of candidate that inspires people to run out and vote for him and work for him, he's not on the top 100 list, okay? And that's why I think all along his candidacy, if there is such a thing, has been for vice president and not for president.
There was a follow-up to the CPAC straw poll. The National Review tried to recreate it online where people all over the country could take part, and Daniels did much better there. What does that tell you?
Well, as I said last week in previewing this speech, you know, it wasn't the audience there that was important for this. It was the people that would see it all over the country as a result of it, and that's true. I think the media coverage has been extraordinary. I mean, they've said one after another talked about what a great speech it was. It was an adult speech. He was the grown-up at this event. And he talked about things in a way that nobody else did. Everybody else kind of threw the red meat out there, let's throw another Democrat on the fire kind of a speech. He did not do that. And I think it set him apart. I think it was his Cooper Union speech, and I think it's one that's going to propel him.
Okay, explain the
Cooper Union. Well, the Cooper Union speech was the speech that Abraham Lincoln gave at the Cooper Union building in New York City that propelled his candidacy eventually to the White House. I think this was that kind of a speech for Mitch Daniels. America right now may be ready for competence as over personality, and if that's the case, then he's got a shot at this thing.
Introduced by George Will. George Will wrote a glowing column afterwards. That can't hurt.
And in fact, the George Will column was one of just several very, very complimentary pieces done by national pundits in the aftermath of the speech. Peggy Noonan did a very complimentary piece, several others. I think there was one in the LA Times that may have suggested something to the effect that even though Ron Paul won the straw poll, the big winner at CPAC was Mitch Daniels. Now, that may be a stretch to draw that conclusion when you're at 4% versus whatever double-digit take Ron Paul had. But clearly, a lot of people who follow these things closely liked what they heard, perhaps because, as Mike says, it is a departure from what everybody else was doing, which was trying to throw the red meat out there and just get people stirred up with what has become almost a stereotypical approach.
Sherry Daniels gave an interview to a South Bend TV station this week where she indicated that she's hesitant to get involved in a presidential campaign. Might that be the most newsworthy item on this front this week?
You cannot underestimate the influence that Sherry Daniels will have on his decision to run. So I'm sure that will be an important consideration for the governor should he decide whether or not to run. But it's clear that all it has led up to is that the moderate part of the Republican Party really, really likes Mitch Daniels. And I think that Ann's point is well taken. That's not the group that's going to make the decision in the primary, most likely. So it's a tough call for the governor right now.
Yeah, that's the problem right there, because the moderate element is too small, and the dominant is the right-wing crazy element there.
Certainly when you have, in the primary.
In the primary. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, but that's how you get the nomination.
Unlike what Evan Bayh faced on the other side, with the left-wing deciding who
there's
the candidates
There's a much bigger
are.
Realm, excuse me, but there's Come a on. Much bigger moderate group in the Democratic Party than there is in the Republican Party.
But that
Party.
Is kind of what he ran into, right?
Sure.
Well, he ran into the fact that there were too many people that were too similar to him running at the same time is what he ran into. But here you've got, you know, his speech, by all accounts, everybody liked. But you're comparing him with Donald Trump. And you're comparing him with that crazy woman from
Michelle
Minnesota.
Bachman.
This group
oh my
booed
God.
Dick Cheney,
I mean,
24
you know,
hours before him.
Well, sure, because That's he was it. A draft dodger.
He
never saw a deferment he didn't like, and yet he's running the charge for everybody else's kid to go to war. It's one of the things I detested about him.
Sound like you want to join CPAC.
No, I want our leaders to lead by example, and that's something Dick Cheney never did.
Well, one thing about CPAC, it's going to be interesting, the division within the, and we talked about this before, within the Tea Party movement, where you have the social conservatives and then the more libertarian wing. And Ron Paul, of course, who came out for the second year in a row on top of the straw poll, he's very much of the libertarian
right.
side. So if he were to somehow emerge as a real contender, which may not happen,
surprise me.
You would still see, I think, a real division and a rift that already is there would become very much more in the spotlight.
Back to Indiana, the governor's plan for private school vouchers cleared its first hurdle in the General Assembly this week. The vote in the House Education Committee was along party lines, with majority Republicans winning 8-5. The vote came after 10 hours of testimony over 2 days. The bill would award scholarships of up to $4,500 to some public school students who seek to attend private schools. Democrats say it would hurt public schools, and they say it's not fair.
A choice to perhaps be chosen to go to that school. You may get in. I'll give you a choice that maybe I might choose you. That's not the American way.
If one child who takes these scholarships and can possibly cure AIDS, if one child uses these scholarships and stays out of prison their whole life, please explain to me why it's not worthy of us moving this bill out of this committee. For the general,
Representative Rhonda Rhodes there, preceded by Representative Greg Porter, John Ketzenberger. Why is this a partisan issue?
Well, it's partisan because of what it does potentially to the school funding formula. Every dollar that is diverted into a voucher program and therefore goes into a private school takes a dollar out of the public funding formula. And while the Democrats may have differences on some items like charter schools and some other areas of education, they are united in the need for more money in the public school system, and this is a real threat to that, and I think that that's why it's become a partisan issue.
Yet, no reason to believe that this will be stopped.
No, I don't think there is a reason to believe that it will be stopped, because all you have to do is get to a point in your grade school career where you can look at the mathematics of 60 versus 40 in the House, and the Senate being equally lopsided. That's those numbers don't lie, and that's why I think these things will sail.
But there was, I understand that the governor's PAC, Aiming Higher, was sending some email this week into Republican districts encouraging people to tell some lawmakers to vote for this. Is there some trouble?
Well, I don't know the trouble, but I think they want to underline the fact that this is part of their agenda. And, I was struck by, and I listened to most of this debate, and there was a lot of it, but I was struck by the civility of all of it. There wasn't the screaming and yelling that you usually associate with this kind of a issue that can be divisive. And it didn't happen. And it was a very honest, open debate every step of the way. And that was good, I think, for a lot of reasons. But it's going to pass. It's really on its way to happening in Indiana.
But haven't Democrats around the country supported school choice?
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why this is a partisan issue here. Okay. First of all, we have done all kinds of things to public education. You can now go across district lines and go to any public school you want to go to.
Public school choice.
Public school choice. You also have charter school choice, and you have magnet schools. And you have all kinds of things going on simultaneously. And now we're about to pull the rug out from under that. So that public schools who have these tremendous facilities like they have in the suburban counties are going to get less money because of the voucher system. But the real reason it's a partisan issue is because this is about taking another whack at the middle class. That's what this is about. What they don't like is the teachers make a living wage. And one way to do that is to go around that system through private schools and pay them much less. Just like they're going to do with right to work, just like they're doing with outsourcing state jobs so that they get paid $10 an hour and have no benefits. The Republican Party wants to cut taxes for the rich at the same time it undermines the middle class. And that's what this is about.
But this would help parents of disadvantaged
kids. This would have some advantage to 10% of the students, and the other 90% of the students are going to see less. That's what it's all about. And by the way, teachers' salaries will go down because they're going to point to the model of parochial schools, and parochial schools have done well, but they don't pay a fraction. They don't pay a fraction of the salaries to teachers that public schools do.
Testimony to that effect.
Keep in mind, though, in terms of the you talk about the helping people of lesser means. Keep in mind, the cutoff for a family of four would be 200% of the reduced lunch program, so it's about $81,000. And the original plan, as it came forth, was up above $100,000. Right. That, I think, is a tough sell to suggest that something like that is helping the impoverished.
How does it get paid? Does it get paid to the parents, or does it get paid to the schools?
It's a scholarship that the student takes to the school.
Okay, so the student takes it. Does he have to stay in the school the whole year? If he stays in the school the first month, does he get it refunded and go to public school? How does that work?
I'm not sure they've figured all that out yet.
Oh, well, that's going to be interesting because the devil's in the details on these things, particularly if the scholarship goes from the state directly to a parochial school, which is unconstitutional, just for the record.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, do you support private school choice? Your choices are yes or no. Last week's question was, should Indiana adopt an Arizona-style immigration policy? 24% said yes, 54% said it should be left to Congress, 22% said no action is required. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. There will be a 2-year spending freeze for public schools under a House Republican version of the state budget. The House Ways and Means Committee made small changes in the governor's budget proposal, but they include a school funding formula that would change the way the money is distributed. For example, Washington Township schools would get a 6% increase in the first year of the budget.
Of the 350 schools, about 200 of them gain either in dollars per student or in total dollars to that school corporation. One of the others.
Ways and Means Chairman Jeffrey Espick there, who also said that 150 schools would be losers. The Indianapolis public schools would take a 5.7% cut in the first year. John Schwanis, will that funding formula hold up?
Well, we'll certainly see a lot of opposition voiced by urban school districts. We've already started to see that, not surprisingly. But ultimately, I think it will hold up for the same reason we just mentioned a moment ago with the last segment discussion. The votes are there. There seems to be support for this, of having dollars truly follow students. I mean, the notion has been that they followed, but there was a period when if the student went there, it sort of trailed a little bit behind. This actually would make it much more of a direct connection between the student and the dollars. And I think there is support for that within a majority of the people in the General Assembly.
Because of the Republican majority.
Yeah.
There's a lawsuit, Hamilton Southeastern and some other folks brought, contesting the last budget that didn't have the money follow the student to the degree this one does. Is this in response to the lawsuit, or is this just the fact that there aren't Democrats there to take part in the decision-making?
There's a little of both in that, but clearly the legislature heard the lawsuit and paid attention to it. But I think this has been a long-time philosophical thing for the Republicans in the House in particular. Going forward, though, it'll be interesting to see what the Senate does. The House is clearly laid out a much different formula than we've seen before. And the other thing that makes it different is that we're talking about all state dollars here. There's no backstop from the local government unless they do a referendum. And that's certainly no sure thing. So it'll be interesting to see the contrast between what the House has done or is about to do and what the Senate then will do and how they reconcile that. Because I think the Senate's got some different ideas about how you handle how the money follows the student.
The Republicans in the House spent more than what the governor spent overall in the budget as well, by $60 million. Should that be expected?
Should it be expected? Oh, yeah, it should always be expected. I mean, they're never going to adopt exactly what the governor's budget's going to be, and the devil will be in the details when they go down to negotiate it. But, you know, the question is if they want to negotiate it to put it all off on education and cut education funding, you know, they have the votes to do it.
They also, the House Republicans, restored the 3% cut the governor gave to universities. Explain that.
Well, first of all, on K through 12 funding, they did flatline it in this budget, and that's what they've done. The difference is they've taken out the DeGoster, which has been something that's been there in the past where you pay for students that don't exist over a period of time to give schools time to wean themselves off of that money. This budget, no first run of a school formula has ever passed the legislature that I can remember.
Right.
This thing's going to be changed.
And what's interesting here is they've actually published the school run and distributed it, so they've got something to argue about where they don't have at this point.
That's true. And I will say this. Representative Espich has gone way out of his way to do just that, to give them all plenty of time to talk about it. And it'll change twice between now and the time we end this session. But I do look for major changes in the Senate. But this is the third time around where Senator Kinley's idea that the money followed the student,
right.
This is the first real budget where that is actually really what this formula is all about.
Planned Parenthood of Indiana receives $1.6 million a year in taxpayer money. It says that money is not used for abortions. In fact, federal law prohibits that. But Republicans in the Indiana House want the money cut off regardless because Planned Parenthood is an abortion provider. The committee approved a bill to do just that. Planned Parenthood performs 5,000 abortions a year in Indiana, though President Betty Cochran says that's just 6% of the services it provides. Freshman Republican Matt Ubelhor is the author of the bill.
Planned Parenthood, as I pointed out, is the largest provider of abortions, and I am morally against abortions, okay? So, yeah, I am biased. I am against abortions.
The fact is the funds we're talking about today prevent unintended pregnancy and reduce the incidence of abortion.
Ms. Chairman. And Delaney, is Planned Parenthood misunderstood?
Absolutely. I mean, if that representative knew what he was talking about and he really respected life, he'd put more money in Planned Parenthood because it not only deals with education and contraception to prevent unwanted pregnancies, but it also does screenings for things like cervical cancer that saves poor women who can't afford them. I mean, the hypocrisy behind the notion that you're pro-life, so therefore you're not going to put any money in preventing unintended pregnancies, so you're going to increase the number of abortions is just... I mean, it's so simplistic. He ought to sit down and find out what they really do, because it does a great service.
Even one of the Republican members of the committee, Sean Eberhard, saw it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, do some of these Republicans think they can actually wipe out abortion?
Well, I think, yes, I think they would like to try to do that, and I'm as pro-life as anybody you'll ever meet, but I do think that Planned Parenthood provides some valuable information. And I probably would have voted the same way Sean Eberhard did if I were sitting in one of those chairs, because I do think they give out some good information. But again, this goes back to the pent-up desire that's been there in the House for a good while. They've not had the chance to talk about these issues, do these kinds of things.
But they need to sort some of this out.
But they're going to.
Right.
And like we said, we're still in the first half of the first session.
All right. Finally, in Fort Wayne, the search for the new name of a new city-county building has produced controversy and some humor when the name of a former mayor won in an online poll. It also produced some new merchandise because the winner was Harry B-A-A-L-S. He pronounced it balls. Really. The family has since changed the pronunciation to Bales. The effort to name the building in his honor is a boon for a couple of guys selling T-shirts and mugs.
The only things I knew about him were he was a former mayor of Fort Wayne and his sign got stolen all the time.
My grandma loves Harry Balls, if you could say that. You know, she just cracks up, you know.
What was his name? Harold Balls, obviously. But
the pair hope those laughs keep on coming.
Yeah, we're going to cut that off. should they name the building after him?
This is a very sensitive area, and I just should not go there.
some of us can remember when they had two county chairs. One was Belch, and the other was Beers. So I don't think this should be any concern.
You can feel bad for former mayor Harry Balls, but the person who had it really tough was his wife. Her name was Minnie.
I don't think so. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.